powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Oh, man. Hectic news cycle late yesterday with the news that Nick Rolovich was fired as Washington State's head coach. A lot to come out of that since then. Let me run you through what you missed in case you're catching up right now. Though it'd be hard to miss it on the front of CNN, ESPN, BBC. The Brits are talking about it all over the place. So let me jump into this one right now. Washington State head coach Nick Rolovich was fired yesterday for not complying with Washington's vaccine mandate. So as a reminder, that was a mandate that Governor Jay Inslee passed that required all state employees to be vaccinated. And that was by yesterday's deadline, the 18th of October. So because Nick Rolovich was fired for cause, he won't be paid the remainder of his contract, which ran through 2025. Per ESPN's Kyle Bonagura, Rolovich applied for religious exemption. We all knew that he'd do that. But Bonagura adds a bit more information here. He says, it's a blind evaluation process, meaning that evaluators couldn't see that it was Rolovich's application. And I'm seeing mixed reports about whether or not the application was approved. There are some people saying, look, he didn't get the exemption, he was fired. Bonagura says, when you don't get the exemption, that's the end of the road right there. The fact that it extended and potentially went up to Pat Chun to make the decision implies that he might have gotten the exemption, which would have been very hard to get, but he might have gotten it. But then it may have been determined by his immediate supervisor, which in this case is Pat Chun, that it would have been too difficult to accommodate everything else that he would require. So it could be that it would become too difficult for him to attend functions, to interact with the rest of the coaching staff, to interact with opposing teams, whatever it was. So there's two kind of potential avenues that could have taken. This was Pat Chun yesterday on the dismissal of Rolovich.
Today, Nick Rolovich was formally notified by the university that he has failed to meet the requirements as stated in the state of Washington, Governor Inslee's proclamation 21-14-1 related to vaccination requirements. The noncompliance with this requirement renders him ineligible to be employed at Washington State University and therefore can no longer fulfill the duties as a head coach of our football program effective immediately.
All right. So again, that was Pat Chun on the firing of Nick Rolovich. Four other assistant coaches, by the way, were fired. Three of them came from Rolo's staff in Hawaii. The defensive tackle coach, Ricky Lago, assistant head coach and cornerbacks coach, John Richardson. He was the only one not from Hawaii. Co-offensive coordinator and quarterback coach, Craig Stutzman, and then OL coach, Mark Weber. ESPN's Kyle Bonagura, who I referenced earlier, he's been all over this story. He's got this really long feature explaining everything that's happened. He is going to be joining us at 11 a.m. So at 11 a.m., we're going to get even more information on this from Kyle, who's done a deep dive on everything that's happened. So, Jake, I want to talk about what's next, including who the interim head coaches moving forward, the upcoming schedule. But have you had a chance to talk to anyone with this program? I know you're very well connected within college football.
Yeah, I know quite a few guys at Wazoo who are currently on the team. And I talked to four of them very specifically. And four of those guys are starters. And they're gutted by this. I mean, this crushes them. And you know, I think that to some people, they would maybe think that it's because they don't like Rolovich or upset with him or whatever the case may be, but that it's completely the opposite. They are crushed because they did love Rolo. They're crushed by this ultimate decision and how it all came about. And so they wish that Nick Rolovich was still their coach. And it's difficult. It's very difficult for both sides of the conversation, but everybody, I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting more of, you know, maybe it's being more split or, you know, having one person say that, hey, you know, this is ridiculous or whatever. But no, the conversation was that we're upset that Rolo is getting fired and that they loved him and that they're really sad that he's parting ways and the other coaches that are on the staff are parting ways as well. So this is really tough for everyone within that organization, but more importantly, my thoughts are with the players, who are the ones that end up carrying really the bag for this whole situation. And you know, wherever you lie on the conversation. I mean, Nick Rolovich lost his job because he wouldn't get the vaccine, and I know everyone's digging on the guy, and on one end, I understand you're the highest paid employee. You're a state employee. This is a state mandate for state workers. And just quite frankly, I never really saw that there was going to be a way around that, that they were going to be able to make that work. So on one end, I saw this coming. This isn't like a huge shock to me. And, you know, it would have been great if Rolo would have felt comfortable enough to take the vaccine, or if he was trying to make a political statement, that he could have been more clear about that and transparent about that. Or, you know, if he really was applying for the religious exemption, you know, that there was a way that they could have made it work. I wish there were a lot of answers and solutions to this situation. And I know that there's a lot of people that are pointing, well, hey, there's one easy solution, but that's an individual's choice. I guess I'm left with Rolo. I didn't love the way that he handled it in terms of him being closed off, in terms of him not necessarily explaining himself. And I'm not asking for every detail, but to have some sort of idea as to where he was coming from would have been nice. And you know, I don't know if he was given the opportunity to talk to the players, but by Pat Shun, but it didn't seem like he talked to the players after he was let go. And I wish that he would have talked to the team after he had been let go. I think that the players definitely deserve that.
Do we think that was a choice for him not to talk to the team?
I don't know.
Some
people were making it out to be that, and I don't know if that's the case or not.
Yeah.
So I don't have all the details, and I'm not going to condemn him for something that I don't fully know. But if he didn't, I think that that would have been very disappointing to me, based off of the relationships and the, you know, the conversations that I had with some of those players, and then obviously some of the conversations that ended up coming out via social media, tweets from players, sending their love and support to Rolo, all that. You know, I believe he would have at least owed them that. But I think that the other conversation that I've seen come from this, and I think Pat Shun himself said that, you know, he regrets hiring Nick Rolovich. I also think to myself, well, how could anyone seen this coming? Yeah. Rolovich wasn't hired during the pandemic. None of us knew what life was going to be like in a couple of months when COVID hit and the pandemic hit and the whole conversation swirling around, you know, COVID and vaccines and seeing something so different and new in this country, you know, in terms of, you know, mandates and all those other things. I mean, this is completely new territory. How would anybody foresee that, including Rolovich himself, including Pat Shun, including, you know, everybody in this country?
No one could have foreseen it. And everyone, you know, reacts to things differently. But the role as a state employee makes all the difference to me. Like, it is very difficult to go in. You could never make a mandate requiring private employees of businesses to be vaccinated. But if you're a state employee, then to me, it's fair game to say we're making a rule that in this very deadly pandemic that we are going to require you all to be vaccinated, and jobs change and requirements of a job change and the things that you need to do to fulfill your job change over time. Very few of us sign on to a job and that's the exact job that we stick to exactly those roles forever. And that's, you know, true for anyone's job, you know, but with Rolo, it's just on a spotlight and it's a much bigger job.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the rules of your job and the things that you were required to do changed. And if you wanted to keep the job, you needed to comply with that, and he didn't.
Right, and ultimately he made his choice, right? So whether you agree or disagree with his choice, he made his own choice. So I don't view Nick Rolovich as a martyr, because he made his choice. And I respect his choice one way or the other. I mean, the thing is as I talked about, you know, the conversation changing, I mean, it was state mandates and things of that nature. I mean, look, I'm vaccinated. I don't think it's anybody's business to know that, but I am. I mean, we talk to you guys intimately and openly, and like that's part of my life. Like, I am vaccinated. I encourage others to do so. Like, I've done my research on it and all that, but I 100% believe in freedom, and I 100% believe in medical freedom. So if someone decides that that's not for them, then that's their individual choice that I fully 100% believe in. And the truth is that this is not the norm in this country. There are 46 other states that he could have coached without a problem. But he lives in, he coached at Washington State. There is a vaccine mandate for state employees. Like, it, so the situation is what it is. And so, you know, he had a choice. And as I said before, I think it's completely unfortunate how this all unfolded on multiple sides and multiple ends. And the ones that I care about, ultimately, I don't care about all the other things. What I care about is the players in that locker room, what they've dealt with, what they have to overcome. And gosh, those seniors have been through so much, so much.
Let's quickly, we're obviously going to get back to this again with Kyle Bonagura of ESPN, who's been all over this story. He's joining us at 11 a.m. And well said, Jake, on all of that. And I completely agree with you. It's no one's a villain, but no one's really a martyr here. It was a state employee with a state mandate. I don't think the mandate specifically for state employees is evil and awful. It's not for private companies. And I don't think that, like, Rolo's a villain for not getting it. So I agree with you there. Let's see. We have, again, Kyle Bonagura joining us. So when we're looking ahead for Washington State, they are second in the Pac-12 North. Taking over as interim head coach is Jack Dickert. Right now, they're 4-3. They're coming off three straight wins over Pac-12 opponents, Cal, Oregon State, and Stanford, with a game at home against BYU this Saturday. So
it's a tough turnaround. I mean, you're looking at all of the, think of the upheaval that is going on. So, you know, take the, you know, political conversation aside, put that aside for a second, and now you just focus on the players. You focus on what these guys have to go through, who have been through three coaching changes already. They've been through a whole heck of a lot, and now they've got to go play football. Now, hey, you know, all this is going on. Your head coach is gone. Your OC is gone. Your offensive line coach is gone. Your defensive line coach is gone. And guess what? You're going to go play a really tough opponent in BYU on Saturday. You know, here you go. And you're missing all those guys. You're going to be, you know, heading into this game down, you know, five coaches. It's an extremely difficult thing to do. And what I hope happens is that, you know, Coug Nation rallies around this team, that they fill up the stadium, that they show their love and support to those guys with everything that they have been through. And they're going to have to hire. I mean, think about it. They're going to have to hire coaches in the middle of the season from the outside who have not been with the program to just fill these spots. I mean, this is an incredibly difficult situation for these young men, and I feel for them. I feel for them so much.
I like you pointing out just the not instability, but the turbulence that's happened with that school, with the, especially the players that are seniors, everything they've gone through. And I agree, you just kind of hope that whatever Chun's next decision is, it adds some kind of stability to that program, which it hasn't had for an extended period of time since Leach. But I mean, from the end of Leach's tenure to Rolo obviously being here, it's been so up and down that you can hardly blame the program for struggling on the field half the time, right? Like, mm-hmm. They just haven't had stability there.
Yeah, I mean, it has been, I think, and when you talk about that part of it, I mean, it's Pat Chun. Like, I don't look at Pat Chun and say, you're a failure. Look at the hire you made. Like I said before, that hire was made before the pandemic, and if that doesn't hit, I mean, I think it's a very successful hire. They just won three straight games amongst all the craziness. Like, I think that they had a pretty good thing going on. But with that being said, three head coaching changes with these seniors who have been here for 4 or 5 years now, that's too much upheaval. And Pat Chun has to get this right. He absolutely 100% has to get this right. It has to be successful. It has to, in his own words, embody everything that it means to be a Coug. They can't afford to have a miss here with their next head coaching hire. And I don't know how quickly this will get resolved, but he's got to take his time and do his due diligence to make sure that this gets right. Because I think Coug Nation owes that he owes Cougs Nation at least that.
DeGraw's going to join us at 10:30 to talk about this. We're also going to talk about the Kraken's loss yesterday with him and take a look forward for them. Right now, though, it's time for Headline Rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, Pete Carroll mentioned yesterday that the Seahawks had been in contact with Cam Newton, but this morning NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reports nothing has materialized as of now between the Seahawks and Newton. So what's the real headline?
Consider this less of just a basic headline and more of like a what this story really is. I'm going to bet it stays that way. I have a hard time seeing Cam Newton, a former starter, former MVP, someone who took his team to a Super Bowl. Yes, they didn't win, but he was a huge part of that team. He was a star. Coming in to back up a quarterback who played this for the same kind of time he did, who he was frequently compared to or faced off against, to back him up for 2 weeks and then go on the bench? I don't know. I don't know if he'll do that.
Well, he won't. And neither will the Seahawks be willing to pay. You know, it was reported that Cam Newton wants, you know, at least $1.5 million to consider coming to a team. They're not going to pay that for a couple weeks of work. I mean, if Russell Wilson's situation somehow were to turn for the worse and he wasn't playing for a significant period of time, yeah, I think the Seahawks would consider heavily looking at Cam Newton a little bit more. But right now they're putting their faith in Geno Smith, and I 100% believe that's the right call. Given the situation, everything that's there, and I believe that when you're talking about Cam Newton, yeah, it's a fun conversation. I just don't see Cam becoming a Seahawk at all. I see it the same exact way that you do, and I don't think that they need to rush themselves into that situation whatsoever.
Headline Rewrites.
Rough one last night for the Kraken. Game four of their road trip. Worst one yet, dusted in Dave Haxtell's return to Philadelphia, losing 6-1. What is the real headline?
You know how you stick it to the team that fired you, and then it just trails off, because that was really, really painful. My favorite thing about all of us talking about our home lives when you guys talk about your wives is when I just talk about my roommate, but we all include them together. Like, well, me and Katie were watching this, so she usually doesn't sit down to watch sports outside of Seahawks football. But I got her to watch the beginning of this Kraken game, and I found myself, like, you know when you take a friend to a restaurant or you introduce a friend to another friend and you're like, they're not always like this. Like, that's what I found myself doing. I found myself being like, no, other games have been pretty fun to watch, even the loss against Vegas. It's really not always like this. And pretty quickly she was like, I'm done.
My home routine, normally I usually get home around like 4 o'clock, which is just in time for Willa to take her late afternoon nap. And so I take her, I sit with her, whatever. And last night I was like, I'll DVR it and I'll pick it up right after we're done putting her down. And then my phone just keeps buzzing like Flyers goal, Flyers goal, Flyers goal, Flyers goal.
Oh, it was like, early. Why
Why would I even watch this now?
Yeah.
That was brutal.
It was brutal. And
they'll get a quick turnaround.
They will get a quick turnaround. Thank goodness. And as I've said, and I will say it repeatedly, I am not surprised to see the struggle. I know that there's high expectations for this team, and there's no reason to falter from those expectations whatsoever at this point in the season. But how can you not have some struggle early on when you've barely played together? I know the Vegas Knights made it look easy, but they also had some other luxuries to the process that the Kraken didn't. They got the first opportunity to take advantage of an expansion draft. They got the first opportunity to take advantage of some of the wonky rules. And the NHL, they were more abreast to the situation when the Kraken came around. So you're in a position where, you fielded a pretty good team that you feel good about, but ultimately there are holes and things that you're trying to work through. And a big part of it is chemistry.
Yeah, more than almost any other sport.
Yeah, chemistry, working together, and especially when you're talking about it from a defensive perspective, which this team is supposed to be, that's supposed to be their strength, it takes a lot of chemistry. It takes a lot of being on the same page and working through a lot of problems. So no panic for me in this situation, but hopefully you see them bounce back here against New Jersey, and they start hitting the ground running, because it sure would be great to see them win their home opener. But when you're talking about a defensive team and they lose 6-1, guys, doesn't make you feel all that great.
No. No vibe check there. No vibe check needed.
Not immaculate vibes.
Yeah.
Headline Rewrites.
Headline number three, the Red Sox took a 2-1 series lead in the ALCS after another blowout win over the Astros, hitting their third grand slam in two nights. What's the real headline?
The rest of the country has found themselves just rooting for the lesser of two evils. That's the entire series. That's exactly what the ALCS has become. And I don't mind the turn it's taking right now. I would rather see the Red Sox advance to the World Series than Houston. As much as I was telling you guys that an Astros-Dodgers World Series is kind of what baseball, I don't know, deserves, but I don't mean that in the best way right now. Like, what you deserve is just these two teams that were favored heading into the season. Of course they meet in the World Series. At this point, though, I'm all sold on the Red Sox advancing. At least they had lower preseason expectations. Like, they kind of surprised. Like, they were not supposed to win their division.
That's true. It's very, very true. And I told you from the beginning, I'm the biggest Red Sox fan you've ever seen right now because I do not want to see the Astros in the World Series. Not at all.
No.
And you know what else I love to see? Is they haven't just won or barely won. They have
destroyed them.
Dominated them. Bury them. Bury the Astros.
You know what
else? I love nothing more than watching the Red Sox beat them in that way, and I hope it continues. I hope they finish it off 3-1, embarrassing loss for the Astros. Got to think about it all offseason.
You guys know what us Red Sox fans always say.
Go Sox.
Go Red Sox.
Oh.
Go Red Sox. That's what we always say. Go
I shortened Red it too much.
Yeah. That's
There's two teams with the name
That's how
Sox.
I can tell you're not a real fan.
Yeah. Wow. Called out.
Don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show if you miss it. Subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. Can I tell you guys just in 10 seconds? Like, I sometimes forget I'm on air, but I realized as I was talking, I would have turned and told you this in the sports pit, so I'm just going to keep rolling with it.
Sure.
I had a dream that someone left us a review, and they said really mean things, and then they had a shrimp emoji.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. But it doesn't make sense, but I want you to know that's a real dream that I had.
I think
shrimp?
It just...
I don't know. I don't know what
you're
it
small.
Means. I don't know what it
Cut
means.
Cut you off the knees. Hey, speaking of which, we're talking about great things that are happening with Boston and Houston. Hello. The other thing that's great is Atlanta is beating the Dodgers 2-0.
Yeah.
Are we really going to get a Red Sox Braves World
Stacey
Series?
Remember what Stacey was talking about last week?
I
how
know.
She wanted to see the evil empires face off?
Sorry.
Curtis and I, we were the only ones that were fighting for the good guys here in this situation. Yeah. And
there
my
are
dream...
no good guys outside of Atlanta. Which
yes,
still
there is. It's
is
Atlanta. Like... Yes, Atlanta is 100%. And I know that's what you were just saying. But Freddie Freeman, as I said, go fighting Freddie Freeman.
Yeah.
That's what I've always said.
Go Braves, as we've all
Us Braves all fans said. Have always said.
Stacey, you literally just said you're a Red Sox fan.
I don't remember that. No.
30 seconds.
The Groz joins us next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline is the Groz. Hey, Groz, how are you?
Hi, guys. How's it going?
We're good. We were just talking about Nick Rolovich this morning, a wild story. Obviously, it's dominating headlines, not just in the world of sports, but given the context and given the subject matter, dominating headlines everywhere, CNN, I mean, Fox News, BBC. It's one of the weirder stories I can remember, Groz. Is this the same for you, just one of the weirder things you can remember covering?
Definitely, Stacey. I can't think of anything to really compare to it in this circumstance. It's been a bizarre three-month period where you know, it was obvious that the university, which is... had made their position very clear that all employees, including the highest paid employee in the state, were going to be subject to what they believed was best for everyone, which was having this vaccine policy in and having guys vaccinated, and to not say anything about it really never saying anything about it, it was a very frustrating thing for the university. It's a sad thing for the team, which is playing well. It's a sad thing for the players who are playing well, and there are really no winners here.
You're right, Groz. There are no winners in this situation, and just speaking to the players from that perspective, Groz, these seniors have been through so much. The Helinski situation and how tragic that was. Now three coaches during their time. What pressure goes on to Pat Chun in terms of getting this next hire right in terms of it being a successful one for the Cougs?
Yeah, it's big, and you know, it's obviously not going to happen until the year is over. I'm really curious to see what this very resilient bunch, I think that we'd have to say from what we've seen so far, is able to do the rest of the way, starting with BYU. I mean, you know, I think adversity, and Jake, you've been a part of this. You know, when you have adversity as a team, you really kind of pull together. And I imagine that's been the case for these guys, even though there may be disagreements about how it comes down. It's us against the world kind of mentality that can actually serve a team well, and I hope that it does for those guys, because they have been through a lot, like you said. And yes, it'll be an important hire when they get back to it in the off season, and perhaps you know, Jake Dickert will make it an easy hire for him by doing a great job, because he's the man in the hot seat right now. He's got to try and keep, quoting someone I saw in the paper today, keep the air in the tires. He lost four assistant coaches as well, so we'll see what they can do. But I think teams in these cases, it's not surprising to see a lot of times they pull together.
What's been your conversation like with people that you've talked to about it? Most of the people I've spoken with are like, hey, it's a state mandate. You're a state employee. It is what it is. But then other people I've spoken with think that, like, you know, it's the mandate's wrong, or Pat Chun shouldn't have done it. I mean, what are your conversations like right now?
Similar to yours. I mean, I think, look, I mean, it was the first public university in Washington State to have a vaccine mandate. They make the point of saying they're safe and highly effective, you know, and I read also in the paper that I think they got seven cases right now of COVID-19 in Pullman out of their population of close to 25,000. So, you know, they were crystal clear. I think the thing that you know, I come back to the most is, why not make a statement at some point if you're Nick Rolovich? Why go 3 months and not say anything and just, you know, hint that it might work out? That's mystifying to me. Not to carve out your ground and you know, actually just respond to this over the last 3 months. It really put Chun and the university in a very bad spot, I thought.
Graz, switching gears here, you look at the Seahawks and what they went through in the game that they had. I mean, what did you make of the game? Are you feeling, you know, Stacy and I, we talked about two feelings you walk away with. One, you walk away with positives, and man, look at that second half, and look what they were able to do when they stuck with the running game. And the second part is, this is a team with huge expectations that are now 2-4 in a pretty bad spot. So how are you feeling?
You hit them both on the head. I mean, there were some things to like in the game, and mostly, I mean, was the fact that they came back. I thought that was good. I mean, I cut my little audio piece, and I wondered about, you know, they ran the ball in the second half, and why they didn't run it in the first half is beyond me. When I hear Pete Carroll talk about, well, you know what, that's what we do. When we run the ball, we do it effectively. Well, why, you know, I was curious if they still script the first 15 plays. If they do, they scripted 11 passes and 4 runs. And I know that's simplistic. There may have been some changes at the line, but, you know, script more running plays early if that's what it's going to take. So I thought the fact that they came back was impressive. I thought, you know, obviously it was disappointing to have the fumble end the game the way it did. And then the big picture, you're entirely correct. They're 2-4, and the season is on the line on Monday night. I mean, no matter what, in my opinion, you lose that game, it's going to be almost impossible to make the postseason. So, you know, you've got a winner go home kind of feeling, I imagine, from Seattle.
Yeah.
For this game, a team that's used to being in the playoffs, a team that's used to winning, and it'll be quite a game tonight against the Saints on Monday. I think they will play with that kind of desperation. We'll see if it's enough.
Hey, what'd you make of Trey Brown?
He looked awesome. I mean, he looked terrific, and not just the one big tackle, which was great. He had a solid game all the way around. The corners had a pretty good day against Pittsburgh. I mean, they you know, all things considered. So I thought it was one heck of a debut, and I'm eager to see more.
Graz, I am eager to see more as well, and we'll see if this ultimately comes to be a situation that works out for this group. They obviously need to try to settle down that cornerback group as much as possible. You know, one of the other things that is staggering when you really think about Daryl Taylor, Graz, is he's been a standout rookie, and obviously it was a very scary injury, but it gets you thinking and wondering, okay, well, who's going to step up if he's out? And it just goes to show where the pass rush currently is at. Graz, how surprised are you to see this defensive line group struggle the way that they have?
Really surprised, Jake. I think, like everyone else, it really felt like, you know, with Carlos Dunlop added to the group and with young guys, you know, with another year of experience, who had shown some promise last year, that this was going to be something that was, if not a strength, was certainly not going to be a concern on the team. And in fact, it's wound up being a real weakness. And, you know, Jamal Adams has not been able to figure his way back into the mix at all in terms of pressure on the quarterback. That, I think, was totally unexpected. And one of the things that you didn't, you know, I believe Taylor was leading in sacks, was he not?
Yes, he was.
Right. So, yeah, and now he's out. So I don't know where your pass rush is going to come from. And you know, well, I know where it should be coming from. I don't know why it's not coming from there, but maybe it will come from there on Monday.
All right. He is the Groz. Thanks so much for joining us, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Groz.
I realized something, Jake. I kind of set us up for failure here. When I told you that I had a dream literally last night that people left reviews on our podcast, mm-hmm. and it was just shrimp emojis. People are texting in shrimp emojis.
I hope we see some reviews on Apple Podcasts after the show today.
Just nice pod, just shrimp emoji.
Solely shrimp emojis. Five stars, though.
Five-star shrimp emoji. I don't know why dreamed that.
When Stacey gets in these situations...
That's how mundane my dreams are.
She goes all the way into it. She doesn't back out. She, you know, like the whole talk to me yesterday.
Talk to me.
Some things are left to just leave behind. You
guys,
know?
I have good news about the pass rush.
You do?
I have really good news about the pass rush.
Okay.
Get excited.
All right.
I also have bad news.
I'm skeptical.
I also have bad news about the pass rush. It's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
I got good news and bad news when it comes to the pass rush, Jake. We'll start with the... Do you want... Which one do you want first?
What do I want first? I want the good news first.
Okay, let's start with good news.
I want to feel good about things.
The good news is that Daryl Taylor, who in a very scary moment was stretchered off the field in that game against Pittsburgh, no idea how guys just get their mind right and jump back into the game, went to a hospital. CT scan's clear. MRI is clear. Everything's clear. Pete Carroll is asked in yesterday's press conference, can he actually play this week? Here's what he said.
He's not out of the woods of playing this week. So that's a thrilling, you know, response to what it looked like and everybody could have anticipated. So we'll see how that goes. And he's got to have a good week to do that. And I haven't talked to Daryl since the MRI stuff came back. I talked to him last night, whenever it was, in the middle of the night. And he was very positive about it and all that. So we'll see what happens. But a really, really good report. And I know a lot of people were really, you know, upset about that, like, you know, for good reason. And, you know, whenever they take a guy off like that, you know, the threat is so huge. Anyway, he came out great. So we'll hope for the best, and he may have a chance to go this week.
Daryl Taylor currently leading the Seahawks in sacks with 4. He's tied for first with 7 pressures. You'll never guess the player he's tied with for pressures. Never in a million.
For pressures?
For pressures.
Okay, so you just
never
throw it out.
Never in a million years.
Throw it out there?
Yeah.
Al Woods.
Rasheem Green.
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that.
So that's the good news. The good news is that Daryl Taylor, first of all, that Daryl Taylor was okay. Nothing to do with the team. The good news is that Daryl Taylor is okay. The secondary good news is that he can return to play way sooner than anyone thought he would, even potentially this Monday night against the Saints. But it also reminded us, that good news, that the pass rush is in kind of bad shape. Not at all where we saw it being. Heading into this season, I know Curtis, I know Jake, and I know myself all talked about, look, this pass rush isn't going to have huge, big name talent outside of guys like Carlos Dunlap. Like, the most well-known names are going to be guys that, like, are a little bit older, right? Like,
right.
Your guys that are young, that are, like, potentially going to be impact players, no one knows about. No one knows about Daryl Taylor, especially heading into this season. I mean, his name was showing up on that broadcast. Collinsworth was impressed with him. But obviously he was forced out of the game. And so, again, the good news is he's coming back. The bad news is Daryl Taylor's been the most impactful part of a pass rush that you had somewhat high expectations for. I mean, they had much of the same group without Jaron Reed, much of the same group heading into the year. And they finished last year 7th in sacks. So what's been the issue?
Well, the issue is that you're not getting production. You're not getting production from guys that you were anticipating would be the group that would help you generate those sacks. And so I look at Carlos Dunlap. I look at Kerry Hyder. I look at Jamal Adams. Throw Benson Mayoa onto that list as well. But if you just talk with those three, those three guys, Carlos Dunlap, Kerry Hyder, Jamal Adams, combined, they had 24 sacks in 2020. 24 sacks. This year, they have zero. Zero sacks. Last year, in terms of tackles for loss, 29 in 2020. They have five right now in 2021. So you just look at that group right there, in and of itself. That is a major cause for concern. And Benson Mayoa, you throw him onto the list. He has one sack this year, okay? And he's got two tackles for loss. Whereas last year, Benson Mayoa had seven sacks. And you saw a huge uptick in production from Benson Mayoa. So really, the group that you were banking on being the leaders of your pass rush haven't produced. And not only have they not produced, they've been non-factors. They have not been generating pressure. This isn't a Jadeveon Clowney situation where you're going, oh, they haven't got the sacks, but gosh, they've been disruptive. They're making plays. They're causing pressures. They're doing all these other things that make that player so dynamic and special. No, they're not even doing that.
I have those numbers for you. Do you want them?
Yes.
So 10 sacks as a team. I'm taking out the team sack against Ben Roethlisberger, who really just kind of fell down. Then you've got 54 pressures. Important to note, you've got 14 of those 54 pressures from Daryl Taylor and Rasheem Green. Al Woods accounts for five, and Jordan Brooks has four, along with Bobby Wagner. So just the defensive line. Do I include Daryl Taylor with that? Because he's a situational pass rusher. I will for the sake of this conversation. Daryl Taylor, Rasheem Green, and Al Woods combining for 14, about 22 of those pressures of 54. You have quarterback knockdowns, 22. They've only blitzed 53 times. Again, 22 hurries. It's not been like outstanding numbers.
Right. It really hasn't. It hasn't been outstanding numbers. And that to me is part of the problem. I mean, right now when you talk about sack percentage, okay, so sack percentage sometimes can be a better statistic than just sack totals, meaning that how often are they passing in a given game, and what is the percentage of your sacks? I mean, they're getting a sack, you know, 4.49% of the time. That puts them at 29th in the league. I mean, they are at the bottom of however you slice it. It's not good. And so we saw this group struggle in this way last year, and they were able to turn it around. They were able to fix this because of contributions from guys like Carlos Dunlap and others stepping up in a big way, but also Jamal Adams being utilized more effectively to his skill set. They tried to do that this last week. I think they're on the right track, and hopefully they'll continue to keep doing so and will have better results because of it. But as of right now, the simple answer is the guys that you were hoping would step up and the guys that you paid this offseason to be in charge of that pass rush, you're not getting any production from them whatsoever. And that is, I don't know how you put that on the front office. I don't know how you look at it. If you
right,
look at
it's
these
the
guys,
same group, so it's
it
like...
is the same group. And you look at Carlos Dunlap and the year that he had, and you go, all right, this guy has a resurgence. He is in the latter part of his career, and you're hoping that you can capitalize on one more good year from Carlos Dunlap. Kerry Hyder Jr. to me was always going to be a guy that was not someone that you should have been banking on to lead your pass rush. He's too inconsistent of a player. But in terms of rotation, I understand the idea of adding him there. Benson Mayoa, you know, you've just gotten older with your pass rush instead of getting younger, instead of adding speed and youth to that group, which I think is proving itself to be a mistake.
From the text line, Mac and Jack's text line, is there anyone we could get on the open market to help the D-line? What are your thoughts? I do want to talk open market, but I'm going to add that trade deadline's still at the end of the month, so they could make a mid-season trade. But again, I think, so I want you to answer that question actually before I continue for the sake of this texter. Is there any free agent you're thinking where you're like, I wouldn't mind tapping into that resource?
Nope, not
okay.
Right now.
Great news.
Not right now. There's nobody out there that I'm looking at and going, man, if they could just pick up this guy. That's not the case right now. You know, some people might look at Geno Atkins, but there's a reason why nobody has picked up Geno Atkins at this point, not even a conversation. And then the other side of it is, who knows? Who knows where they're going to be at in terms of the trade deadline? It all is going to depend on, in my opinion, what happens this week. If they lose against the Saints, I don't know if you're going to be buyers if you're John Schneider and Pete Carroll at the trade deadline, because your playoff chances are slim to none. So You know, it's not impossible, but it's the percentages are not in your favor at that point in time. And so I don't know if it would be smart for you to, you know, trade draft capital in order to add to this team. But we'll see how it goes. If they're able to win, if they're able to go 2-1, they're able to go 2-0 these last two games before the bye, then that changes things for sure.
Don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show if you miss it. Subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. Please don't leave shrimp emojis. It's on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. All right, ESPN's Kyle Bonagura, who has been all over Wazoo's decision to dismiss Nick Rolovich, has the details, has the latest. He'll be joining us next. Don't go anywhere.